Film Gronk Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. This is Film Gronk. Our movie for this week is Akira, the classic Japanese anime film from 1988. I have with me today the distinguished
Nicole Gustis
and
Mike Rainey
and me, Serge Dolpierre. Our cue point for Akira is, okay, the Pioneer logo comes up. And then there's another credit, and then it says Akira Committee Production. Akira Committee Production dips to black really quickly. In fact, it cuts to black. If you can get to that point, that's our cue point. And then while you're doing that, we're going to talk a little bit, and then we're ready to go. I will count down 3, 2, 1, play. I will hit play on the remote, and so that way you can do that too, and listen to us in sync while you're watching the movie or while you're riding your motorcycle through Neo Tokyo.
I think it's important to note that there's actually at least, I think, 3 different DVD versions, but that Akira Committee Production thing is on all of them. So no matter what edition you're watching, you can still follow along at home, kids.
Yes.
Just do exactly what Serge tells you to do, because that's what I always do.
Oh, why, thank you. And the version actually that we're watching is the dub that was done, the more recent, the Pioneer dub that was
right.
done, because there was a previous dub version which was not as
steampunk or Steam Engine Studios. It was the one that was done in 1989 or 1990, and it was a flawed translation. There are certain aspects of the characters in Akira are very gray, morally gray.
Some of them are literally gray.
Yeah, many of them are actually beyond morally gray to morally pretty reprehensible. And for certain characters that wind up being the heroes, the dialogue in that original English translation tried to make them seem a little bit more heroic by giving justification for some of their negative actions or sweeping certain things they did under kind of covering it over, wallpapering it over with dialogue. So this one is a little bit more truthful.
Interesting. When was your first time watching this?
My first time watching this was when the American release came out, which I think was in 1990, actually. And I saw it in a movie theater in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And it was, I thought it was pretty neat, although there's like the last third I totally couldn't make sense of. And I could really make sense of it this time. I don't know if it's because I'm older or because this version of the dub is way better than the original. It's interesting because the final third of the movie, Katsuhiro Otomo had not gotten around to actually writing that part of the story yet. So the last chunk of this movie is actually very different. The comic book had not, that last third of the story had not been written yet. That didn't get finished. I think the last two volumes didn't get finished until 1991. So,
wow.
Yeah, and it's a very, the comic book is rather different than the movie. It's very worth reading.
Okay.
So,
comic book. No, I knew about the comic book, but I was hoping you've told us about it. So I'll have to go back and read that. It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Mike, when's the first time you saw this?
I have a friend who was very excited about this movie as soon as it was available here in the States, and he got a hold of a VHS copy with the that was the Japanese language version with English subtitles, which was supposed to be a much truer translation of it than the English dub was. So I've seen that, and I think I've seen the earlier not as good English dub a couple of times, and then recently acquired a copy of the special edition DVD that has the newer Japanese or newer English dub on it. And we watched that.
I had bits of the English dub, actually, the original one, actually memorized. I saw this movie a lot.
Yeah, what I had memorized was how incomprehensible it seemed. That's about it.
I saw the, I can't even tell you how I got to know about this, but somehow I did. And I saw the Japanese subtitled version. I don't think I saw the dubbed version. And it was sometime in the 90s. I mm-hmm. don't even know. I was just like, oh, wow, this is pretty damn cool. Of course, I'd had a few beers by then, so I don't remember too much about it. But I remembered enough, like, this is cool. So when it came up, of course, to do it for Film Grok, I'm like, oh yes, we can do this. So I'm really glad that we can go through this and experience the Akira experience again, especially now that I've rewatched it with the new English dub, which actually seemed to work pretty well.
Yeah, which, by the way, for all of you folks playing at home, we're also going to have the subtitles on so that we can see how they match up and how they don't. Of course, a lot of times they tweak the dialogue so that it will fit well with the mouth movements. So the subtitles are incredibly faithful, and the English language dialogue is possibly, it tries to capture the sense, if not the word for word statements of the characters.
Yeah, you know, this is a good, interesting challenge. I'm trying to think if we've done any other foreign language films on Film Grok. I don't think we have. If we have, I don't remember. We've done a lot of them already. I'm usually a stickler for listening to it in the original language and then experiencing as best as possible with the subtitles. So it's interesting here that there's several different ways to. Oh no, we did do a foreign film. We did Let the Right One In, which of course has its own storied history of the subtitles and the dub, because apparently the dub is not as good as the subtitles are. Apparently the subtitles are much superior. It's a better script for it, which is kind of ironic.
The Postman had that issue, as I recall.
Il Postini?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, not the Kevin Costner.
No. The Postman, the Kevin Costner Postman had its own issues, yeah. But dubbing, I don't think, was among them.
Those Kevin Costner subtitles, man. I don't know. It just didn't match with what he was doing on screen.
Yeah.
I went through a phase where I was watching a lot of anime. So the whole concept of something being sort of incomprehensible because it's based on a larger work and they couldn't incorporate all of it, and maybe they have an expectation that you're familiar with the source work. If you've watched a lot of anime, that might not be so alien to you, but this dub does make the plot, especially the ending parts of it, make much more sense, I think, than the original English dub did.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this point in the English dub where you're like, and who and why? and this, it's crystal clear.
Did it seem like in the original dub that it was, I mean, is it that it was done by people in the U.S. that didn't understand the film, or was it done perhaps in Japan where they couldn't get the right English idioms to get it across?
No, it was done by Americans. And my impression is that because several people, including George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, had said that Akira was brilliant, but there was no way to market it to American audiences. So I think that they were tweaking the dialogue some to make certain elements of the story a little more palatable to American audiences, including the military overthrow of the government, for example, which which doesn't quite play out in the original translation. As I recall, it's a little less overt than it is here, and the colonel's a little bit more heroic, so he seems completely justified in what he does, whereas here it's a little like, huh, that was in fact just a military coup that happened there. Yeah, huh.
Very quickly, too. There was like no hesitation. Well, we'll get to that. Now, Serge, I differ from you a little bit in that I have inclinations to want to hear it in the original language first, but when I watch an anime, especially since it's such a visual medium, given the option like watching it on a streaming service or on DVD, I will tend to watch the English dub first just so I can actually watch the visuals first, and then on a subsequent viewing, I'll go back and do the subtitled version because then I'm a little more interested in reading and I've already gotten the whole visual experience with it.
I think for an animated film, I'd go with that, because an animated film, you can hide the fact that the person, you know, it's not like, oh, well, no, they're not really saying those words. But when you're watching a film, it's really clear, oh, that's dubbed. I mean, if you're watching the spaghetti westerns from the 60s, it's really clear that everyone except for Clint Eastwood is speaking, you know, another language, namely Italian. And I don't know. I'm just kind of funny like that. I want to see, that's my only thing. So animation, it doesn't really bother me.
Well, sometimes, too, you watch the, original language version of it, and their mouths still don't match up with what's being spoken.
Right.
Well, that's bad ADR, but okay.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing about this film is that they actually recorded the dialogue before they did the animation, rather than doing the animation and having people say the lines. Interesting little bit of trivia for you. So the mouths were actually made to look more like what was being said. You know, there was a focus on that. So
I'm stealing one of Nikki's points here, but one of the breakthrough things about this anime was that they didn't resort to things like just having the mouth opening and closing repeatedly. They actually did try to animate the words, and they wouldn't do a thing where in a lot of animes, especially TV anime, where you'll have a freeze frame on the character's face and the background is just scrolling by or something like that. And in this, it's like fully animated. Everything about it is fully animated at all times.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll definitely talk about that as we get going in just a second. No, yeah, absolutely. Ready to go? You good?
I'm ready.
Okay, so out there in Film Gronk land, okay, I have the remote in my hand. Everything seems to be working correctly, so...
Prepare your popcorn.
Okay, so I will count down in just a moment, and then we'll hit play. So 3, 2, 1, play. Bingo.
And there we go. That's the...
Things are looking good on the northbound 54.
I like how it's just silent.
They have a really great use of silence in this movie. They really punctuate things excellently with that.
Now, in looking back, this is dated, whatever, July 16th, 1988, mm-hmm. At least in this reality, there was a huge explosion. Now, having watched the film, we've all watched the film, of course,
mm-hmm.
so that means that's Akira, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's the first incident, which triggered the war.
Which triggered World War III.
Okay, which is kind of what I missed when I watched it. Yesterday,
yeah,
it triggered World War III.
Yeah,
but I think it's interesting. They say it took, you know, the guy says it took 30 years to rebuild Neo Tokyo, essentially that they call it now.
I love how that opening shot looks like a microscope slide of like blood work or something.
Yeah,
I like the draw.
Now in Evangelion, wasn't it also Neo Tokyo? Wasn't there a Neo Tokyo in that?
Quite possibly.
Can we call Los Angeles Neo Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, so they're about to do a live action version of this movie, and it's going to be set in New York City, and I really think that's a mistake. I really think it should be set in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But I don't think, if you follow, okay, you want to talk about context. They'd essentially have to say that New York would have been blown up and then rebuilt over 30 years or 50 years. There's no way you can get away with that now.
No.
There's just no way you can't do it.
That Akira logo, by the way, is one of the greatest graphical things ever. I remember how it blew me away the first time I saw it. And
I like the Sony TV there.
You know what I like about this? Reminds me of Aeon Flux, of course, because Aeon Flux was definitely inspired by this.
Well, and it also seems to have inspired the TV series Firefly in a lot of ways. I mean, it's like less and no Western influence, but there's a lot of other elements that Firefly seems to have taken from this.
Really?
I kept noticing things in this... you know, I've seen a lot of anime since I initially saw this, and seeing a lot of things where it's like, well, is that just in sort of the cultural consciousness so multiple filmmakers use it, or are animes like really specifically heavily influenced by a lot of things in here? I'll point out some of those as we go along.
Now, what's the significance of the pill on the back of his jacket? Is it just...
There's some sort of drug that they're acquiring here at this bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure what it's supposed to do.
Because I know the post... I mean, every time I kind of see an image, I see the jacket with the pill...
Yeah.
So I think it's, I mean, I don't think it's core to the... I just love the attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
Just great attention to detail.
The door said fuck you on the back of it.
Yeah.
So he said, well, he said, and drink your dog piss. I just like the characters are just... Now, these characters are supposed to be 14 years old or 15 years old?
Yeah.
That's what they. That's what comes up in the dialogue a little bit later on.
Yeah.
And I find I feel like they don't do a great I feel like people in this don't seem quite that young. You know, I could believe like maybe 17, but
yeah, they definitely don't look 15 to me.
Well, maybe they just grow
15
up quicker in Neo Tokyo.
Neo
Tokyo. The whole thing is they're driving motorcycles. Of course, here in the States, you can't ride a motorcycle legally until you're 16.
Well, I don't think you can in Japan either.
okay.
But
I like how there's two gangs. There's them and there's the clowns.
Yeah, you get the idea that there are more theoretically somewhere, but one of the things that I think that this anime fails at, and they're trying to condense something like 5,000 pages of manga into 2 hours, but Tetsuo is never a character that you can empathize with. He's always just kind of an annoying piece of shit. And I really want to smack him around.
I you know, having watched it again, you know, last night, I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the closest you get is in the flashback to the childhood days when Kaneda comes out and has been beaten up by the same guys that are picking on Tetsuo.
Yeah.
But that's really the closest you get.
Yeah.
But I think that's maybe that's a cultural storytelling thing.
It could be. I've seen other characters in other animes that are similar. Now those taillight effects, I remember those were just so remarkable the first time I saw them. That was,
it's kind of but it's kind of not Blade Runner. It's Tron-esque.
Yeah.
Oh well, definitely. You know, this was definitely, we're talking about Blade Runner. There's no doubt this was influenced by Blade Runner.
That and Tron.
Yeah.
Oh, the clown.
And someone says school kids these days, and all of a sudden, you know, this guy gets thrown through the window. So clearly it's meant that the public is also perceiving them as being teenagers.
Right.
But.
Man, this animation is, I mean, it's almost like they rotoscoped. Do you know if they did?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it really is stunning the way they get the emotion.
He didn't swear in the original dub of this. Tetsuo didn't swear. I don't think anyone swore in the original dub. So
I think it's worth pointing out that this this anime was done without any computer animation. So all of these dimensional buildings going by and stuff, that's all hand-drawn cell animation.
I'm really curious, though. I imagine they had to have done some rotoing of something, had some human models.
Yeah, I know
of
that
some sort. But I love the slow motion, the slow mo move there.
Yeah.
For 88, that was pretty stunning.
I mean, even in the Looney Tunes cartoons, they'll do tests with real people doing back when they were doing those, they would do tests with real people making the movements and wouldn't really rotoscope over them, but would use those as kind of models for how perspective shifts and stuff like that, and how bodies actually move.
How'd they miss each other?
I don't know.
They were both on the white line.
Yeah.
But I think it's hilarious. Hilarious. There's two gangs. There's them. And there's the clowns. Biker gangs. The thing is, biker gangs, we're not really used to it around here. But for example, where I grew up in Montreal, not that they were around where I lived in Montreal, but there were a lot of biker gangs there. And it's a thing. Up in Canada, up in Quebec. Oh,
and you notice how the other biker gang is really more of a Harley gang. And, you know, this is sort of the crotch rocket gang.
These are the, what do they call it? The Ducatis. Well, they're not, these aren't Ducatis, actually.
I like all the, there's all the real motorcycle equipment labels. I wonder if they had to deal with clearances for stuff like this, because that could have been a nightmare.
Oh, well.
And here we come to plot number two. Eventually, these plots will collide. Keep taking notes, kids.
And, of course, the dog thing, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
Cartoons. Now, who is this guy that's helping him escape?
He's one of the resistance or the dissident.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I remember that. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. This whole thing with the dogs is really weird. And I like how they have, they did the thing with the dog commercial.
Yeah. That
really, artistic.
That's really reminiscent to me of a lot of the style in the American Flag comic book by Howard Chaykin.
It's
a really forward-thinking comic book from about this time, and there's lots of innovative use of conveying information.
That kid's going to be scarred for life.
I'm not to interrupt, but the dude just shot the dogs.
Yep.
I didn't feel bad. Wow. When do you see it? Oh, wow. Okay, you were saying?
Yeah, so
Flag?
American Flag, it's a great comic book, and it's
repeal the tax reforms. That's probably not a protest you're going to see in the U.S.
It has a lot of innovative use of things like video screens in the margins with the main action happening in another panel. And
it was
the artist and writer was given a special thanks in RoboCop because they essentially kind of stole his whole aesthetic of the future.
Oh, that's right. Talking about dystopic futures.
Yeah.
This reminded me of a book called Random Acts of Selfless Violence. No, Random Acts... it's by a novel by James Womack. I'll find the title. But it takes place in New York, 30, 40 years from now. And it's like dystopic, not technologically dystopic, but it's interesting like this. I was just wondering if you'd heard of it.
I don't think I have.
Random Acts of Selfless Violence, Senseless Violence.
And this, where they're running away from the searchlights, it's got a very World War II-esque thing going.
Yeah. Well, this is where you get the idea that, well, definitely here, yes, the cops are just, like, shooting at them.
Yeah.
I wonder if all the lens flare they're using influenced J.J. Abrams for Star Trek.
Yeah.
We have to blame someone. Oh, there we have...
our small, shriveled gray child.
That's right. I can't remember his name. Look at that lighting. Well, the lighting. The lighting they draw.
Yeah.
And the, I mean, the way they portray the cops or the military or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And how they just... All right. Where is it? It's horrible. Look at all the blood.
It's kind of worth, yeah, if you're...
And they just... They open up on him. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just brutal.
It's brutal. And it's not like in RoboCop where somehow Verhoeven made it brutal but also made it funny. But here it's just brutal.
Yeah. This is something that could be worth noting if you're watching it for like your second or third time, is trying to track which forces are dealing with the crowds, whether it's the army or whether it's the police, because there are some conflicts between those two groups a little bit later on. And and it's kind of easy to just figure it's anti-dissident forces, but you know, if you're looking for more things to pay attention to, that would be one.
Oh, that's I didn't even notice the distinction in watching it last time. All right.
And again, this is like this is an issue which I'm wondering if it directly influenced later anime, but in Pat Labor 2, the movie by Mamoru Oshii, there's a I guess villain, you call him morally gray character, is setting up the military forces, the self-defense forces, and the police against each other to try to trigger essentially a civil war. So I wonder if there's something in the culture about the
well, yeah, I think it's
relationship
definitely,
between
it, definitely
the police
something
and civil
part
defense.
Of, well, definitely part in how they interact in Tokyo. Well, in Japan. Definitely these are Japanese cultural issues, which we don't necessarily have here in the United States.
Well, I think it might not just be Japanese, because as we've been seeing currently, as we record this, there's a lot of tension flaring in the Middle East against the... various governments of the Middle East, and there's a lot of issues between the police forces and the military forces as part of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely different parts of the world. Oh, definitely.
Pat Labor 2, the movie, is really fantastic, and it's interesting because it's an anime about, like, you know, giant robots and military and police.
Mm.
But there's really not a lot of action to it. It's very thoughtful and philosophical, and it's got a really great core central agon to it that I think is really interestingly played out. I highly recommend that movie.
Right.
Yeah. And then occasionally there's the weird sort of slapstick yet deadly humor that comes up. One of them is...
Oh, the right now?
Yeah, facepalm.
Yep, exactly.
Because that was a dead end or something?
Yes, exactly. Quite literally.
Yeah. That's amazing animation. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with lots of this. So, the stuff was rotoed. This is...
Oh, God.
Man. Yeah, Tetsuo has definitely got some anger issues.
Yeah.
And you can tell because he's got that weird big forehead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because that... Oh.
Apologies to anybody in the audience who's got a weird big forehead. Did you ever see the live-action Japanese film Tetsuo the Iron Man?
Yes. That was weird.
Yes, that was pretty weird.
That was a very, very, very strange.
Well,
it was almost like a David Lynch film, really.
Yeah. And it was in black and white, too.
Oh.
So who are they talking to play this part? What's his name again?
Kaneda.
Kaneda? Zac Efron at first.
And now it's James Franco, which I think is way too old to play that role, considering that he's supposed to be under 16. Zac Efron might be a little old. As some people have pointed out, you know, they could cast some, you know, if they're sending it to Manhattan or L.A., they could cast a couple of Asian members of the bike gang, seeing as, you know, they do have Asians in the United States, but...
What? No. Oh, what are you talking about?
I don't know. Maybe they could get Justin Bieber.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Justin Bieber would be great in Akira.
Actually, Justin Bieber might be exactly the person you cast as Tetsuo to make him sympathetic.
Yeah. Now, I can't remember, isn't there some Marvel comic character that floats around in a little thing like that, and he's, like, got a giant body and a little tiny head?
What?
What, Professor Xavier?
Xavier?
No, no, he's an alien.
Not a Marvel guy, no.
Okay. That kid knows how to dress.
Now, this is the Army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Army is conducting the tests, and here's our here's our bad guy, Army guy. That was a nice little reveal.
Yep.
It's very great. I mean, just incredibly. Is there anything that's been drawn better than this?
No, the cinematography in this is great. The camera placements and compositions are all really outstanding.
Okay, so these were the same. Okay, so these are the same guys. Were these the same guys from the riot?
Yeah, they had the same logos, so I think the riots were Army as well.
Wow. Well, I think this is a separate unit of the Army because they're working with this. No, they've got the same jackets, you're right, with that logo on the back.
An ordinary bike gang. So clearly there's a number of bike gangs. This is just one of them.
And they're ordinary. They're not clowns. They're ordinary. It is Justin Bieber. He's got a B. Oh, that poor kid, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's anybody that you really feel sympathetic towards in the movie, it's gray children.
Yeah. You know, they could lift him. Jesus.
I'd really be interested to hear what a person who's like grown up, you know, essentially Japanese person thinks of this film in terms of their culture.
That's another thing about translating it to somewhere in the United States is, you know, Japan's got the history of having been hit with a couple actual nuclear weapons, and so there's
having been occupied by the Americans for many, many decades.
Yeah, so having a massive catastrophic effect like the initial Akira detonation seems like it would have much more resonance.
Well, that's
set in a culture like that. Whereas, you know, in the U.S., we've suffered some attacks that are more contained. This is not to be disrespectful to anybody that's lost anybody in a terrorist attack, but it's a different scope.
But its core, I mean, in a way, well, I don't think it's core, but it's become almost part of the core of the Japanese experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the Godzilla films are all about, and all the other creature films afterwards.
Yeah.
Clowns. What does this have to do with his mother?
No, well, he was saying that was their alibi. They were all going to visit his dying mother.
Oh, okay. I missed that part.
And
okay.
Didn't he get his arm run over by a motorcycle? And it's not the bandaged arm because that was already bandaged at the beginning.
No, I think it was a different character who we're not seeing that got his arm run over by a...
Now, a word to the wise. If a guy pulls out an incendiary device... Oh, not yet.
Yeah, well,
that's right. That's Kay, who shows up later. That's right. If a guy has an incendiary device and it doesn't work, still clear the building.
Yeah, don't stand there looking at it in your hand.
I like it. It's just like, they're all like, they run, which is smart.
Yeah.
But then all the cops just tackle them when it doesn't go off. Of course, this is played for its comedic effect.
Yeah, one of the lighter-hearted moments in the movie.
Well, it's played for its comedic effect, but then...
Then, of course, we see in the background, it's like, you dumb shits.
No, this is the part that makes it less comedic.
Of course.
Well,
no, but any part with the police or with the military in this, I mean, they're portrayed as treating everyone very brutally. Everyone. Old man.
Yeah.
See, the guy just takes off the grenade. Oh, and he's trying to save the girl.
Yeah.
Hey, you come with us.
He's really got a really great pickup line in here later on. He says, hey, we can go get some drinks and have a long chat about something you're into.
That is a good line. I like how he says he's 25. They're beating the dude right there in the cubicle.
Like, yeah. In an old theater, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the cubicle. It's just a huge room they set up. She's not paying attention. Yep, that's a good line. Oh, I think it's coming up. Let's see, look at that.
Yeah.
You know, do you guys see Children of Men?
Yes.
I have not.
Oh, yeah. That was different, but in the same way, that brutality towards other people.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of a little of that, but there in that movie, it's endemic.
It seemed like in the mid-80s, there was kind of an escalation of violence in the movies where people were just really pushing violence hard.
Here we go.
Oh!
And there's the grenade.
I finally got
it. Yeah.
It was a payoff on the joke. And it's just a bad joke because people just died.
Yeah, well,
go ahead.
Well, the thing also is, in this translation, Kaneda calls her a bitch, which he sure as heck didn't in the original translation.
Oh, I know. And it's in the subtitles, too, yeah.
The establishing shot for this scene with the profile with the two guys sitting on the things and one guy being bald, I swear that's exactly the same as a frame from Ghost in the Shell standalone complex or one of those Ghost in the Shell things.
You know, the thing about the grenade going off in the dome, I don't really feel like that's a payoff to the joke. I really feel like that's a sign of how chaotic things are there right now.
Oh, no, absolutely. But it is a payoff in others. They planted it. I mean, it's not a joke.
It feels like that was the same grenade. It wasn't like some other explosion.
Right, exactly. In other words, they're all that stupid. In other words, they're so, if you really want to think about it, they're so brutal, they don't think for a second that maybe we should disarm the damn grenade and we're just so rock dumb.
Or maybe someone else had a grenade, but
Well, that's true, too. I kind of took it to be
the same one. Yeah.
I keep on getting flashes of Aeon Flux. I want to go watch Aeon Flux right now. I really do. And now,
and our scientist who has no morals. Hello. Who will be played by David Hewlett in the film, I'm sure, because who else would you get to play a scientist without morals? Anyway, sorry.
Damn it. Someone other than David Hewlett?
Stanley Tucci?
David Hyde Pierce?
Nah, he doesn't play amoral. Who could play Amor really well? Tom Cruise?
Tony Shalhoub?
He's not an amoralist.
There's some great discussions between the scientist and the colonel about the nature of scientists versus the nature of military men, and there's a little bit of hubris involved there.
Oh, there's hubris all over the place, because these guys all essentially, in a sense, get in the neck. Actually, the military guy doesn't get he survives.
Right.
He does survive.
Yeah.
Strangely enough. But the scientists are all, well, because once again, it goes back to the whole thing of that they're really stretching technology and science way past where it should be.
Yeah.
And they're basically experimenting on people, which is where this all came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they experimented on Akira and see what happened.
I think I heard that they were planning on casting Morgan Freeman as the colonel, which I'm like,
I didn't know what part, but I heard about Morgan Freeman.
Well, I was thinking, you mentioned yesterday when we were watching it that he made that Adam Baldwin grunting sound, and Adam Baldwin would be a real great choice for that role.
Yeah.
I don't know if Adam Baldwin could carry the part, though. Well, he could, maybe.
It doesn't really involve a lot of... Anyway.
It doesn't involve a lot, but it's still someone who's got to be there as a... Adam Baldwin, no disrespect to him. I mean, he plays a great support. He's a great character actor, supporting actor. I don't know if he's ever carried a film as a main actor.
Yeah.
Has he?
My Bodyguard.
But he wasn't... Well, he was a co-star in that.
This is where they say they're 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at this school.
See?
They're under 15.
They're under 15.
And look at the class. I mean, this is like class of
1984. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
They're all getting smacked.
Yeah, I also don't know how you put that in an American film. I think that you... I don't know that you...
Well, in an American film now,
yeah,
maybe well, no, even then you're right, but
it, yeah,
it is though the dystopian underbelly of a you know the once glistening rebuilt city.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, look at those 80s hairstyles.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, and trust me, if you go to Manhattan, none of those outfits would look out of place.
Well, that's
right
true.
Now, it's all back.
The 80s stuff?
Oh, yes.
I was shopping yesterday. I saw some thin ties. I'm like, the skinny ties? Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
The kid just puking blood.
Oh, what?
They're walking along and everyone's chatting and there's one kid just like, blood coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And the pink pop collar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, poor Cowrie. I've also heard that the live action version they were planning, they're already talking about doing it as two films so that they it has more time to play out than this did.
Have you heard, have they talked about a director for that yet?
Oh.
I can't see. You know the only person I can picture?
Who?
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder, that's exactly what I was
yeah,
thinking.
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't remember who it is.
Well, he's doing Superman. Oh, because that's going to be so great. Okay.
You know what would make a great Superman movie is if it wasn't boring.
Excellent.
And here's Tetsuo.
Hello, Tetsuo. He's got that crazy look in his eyes.
And he's drinking a Coke.
And he's a
litterer.
He's a litterer. He's a bad person. It was a really interesting character in this. It's just, he's not sympathetic going into it, and there's just nothing sympathetic that happens to him.
Yeah.
So, you know.
This is his, like, only sympathetic moment. If a film is redone of this, there needs to be a little bit more to make him, you know, a little bit more sympathetic, because in this film, you don't get the idea that he was the guy who was always picked on and that's why he's reacting the way he is. They kind of shoehorn that in like 98 minutes into the film, which isn't
right.
helpful. You need to shoehorn that in at the beginning a little better.
Yeah, it wouldn't really take that much of an adjustment. You just need to plant some of those seeds a little earlier, give you a little more insight.
But you see, the interesting thing is that structurally, because essentially the star of the movie is Kaneda.
Yeah.
It's not Tetsuo. It's not Akira. Even though it's called Akira. Oh, Star Bowling.
Mm-hmm. But Tetsuo is also, he's the other star. He's just the anti.
But he's the antagonist.
Yeah. Just,
he becomes the antagonist.
But
he's, in other words, structurally, you would usually make the protagonist the one who gets the power. So it would be Kaneda, essentially, who's got to struggle it and has got to struggle with his nature. Is he going to be good? Is he going to be evil? That kind of thing. And then the girl, of course, would come along and help him along, and he, you know, she'd say it's going to be okay, and then he would become good. That's the way you'd usually do it.
Well, this is about Kaneda's growth, personal growth as well, because he...
Oh!
Yeah.
That was not nice.
No, not at all.
Don't hit the girl. Ugh.
Well, I think this is meant to show how brutal the clowns are.
Well, yes. In what way really does Kaneda actually grow or develop as a character? Because he's pretty...
He doesn't.
Be motivated by self-interest and trying to get the girl.
Well, yes, but toward the end, they do say you're going to grow into... The freaky kids say you're going to grow into your power and then you're going to be able to help us with Tetsuo. And that kind of happens. You know, he's able to achieve empathy with Tetsuo, which is what allows the kids to then take Tetsuo off to Never Never Land.
Okay, so instead of destroying him and killing him, yeah.
Right.
In other words, that's the interesting, but I think it's interesting how they kind of screw around with the structure of the characters. It's that Kaneda doesn't really, he doesn't know how to be a hero. He thinks he does, but he doesn't, and he doesn't really accomplish it.
Right.
Right away. So,
in my mind, I mean, it's like not...
It
doesn't really come down to being a movie about heroes for me.
Right.
You know, it's more of a social...
Oh, like the slow-mo.
I think the point about this movie is that no one truly has the power to be a hero. It's not all about one person, and I think that's one of the good things about
it. Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone who thinks they're a hero quickly, or sometimes not so quickly, has that concept disposed of.
Yeah, Tetsuo is definitely losing it now.
Yeah.
But you know he's losing it because he's essentially being whatever they're doing to him.
Yeah. This is where they kind of try and put that empathy in and get you that information about Tetsuo, but it doesn't quite work.
They need to find some times for him to break through that and find some tenderness that's taken away from him
right.
by the situations. And it wouldn't be too hard to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this is where... Yeah, this is where...
So now this is a movie where if you like pronounce it the way that Japanese pronounce it, nobody will know what you're talking about. Akira.
Exactly.
Akira.
It's like, what did you watch? Yeah. Akira.
What's like Gojira?
What was it? Akira. Oh, why didn't you say that?
Well, it's like Gojira.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Godzilla. I thought this was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yep.
All of his hallucinations, basically.
Yeah.
And of course, they're being spied. Oh, he's got a skinny tie.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, the blue pattern is something bad.
Yeah, really. Oh, it's the CRC.
Mm. I wonder if that's like the CDC. And then you have the very large man in a very black suit.
Yeah. I like it. He's always got a line, and also they just have no concept that anything bigger is going on.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's actually, you know, that's one of the ways in which they are like teenagers, is they really think that what's going on with them is the biggest thing that's going on.
And that they have a certain sense of invincibility.
Mm-hmm. And that what is going on with them is more important than what's going on elsewhere.
So, according to IMDb, Gaspar Noé is going to direct. Does that make sense?
I don't remember that, though.
Well, it's saying that Gaspar Noé to direct. I don't know. I mean, it says 2013 also. This song reminds me of MASH.
Well, it was used in the film MASH, actually.
Yeah. That's why, yeah. I think right at the beginning or right at the end, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, folks, is a great film.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's different than the TV show. And actually, you know, but it's so totally worth watching. They just keep on Okay, now these guys have it on their jackets, have a different symbol.
But they've got that sort of inverted triangle with little things coming off. So I think their army, they're just some
different unit.
Unit
of it.
It's an interesting choice of music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the same song. Now, isn't this song a Japanese song?
Yes, well, it is.
But we heard it in MASH because...
Because they were based in Japan, and they were flying from Japan to Korea to go on base.
That's what it was. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Now I'm all fascinated by the live-action one. Excuse me.
You know, you've got to wonder, Kaneda is supposed to be like... 14 or something. How old is Kay supposed to be? Clown, fuck you. There you go.
Well, if we're assuming that the characters are a little younger than they're looking and acting, she could, by that logic, be conceivably about his age.
Hmm.
Oh, we got a moment of surprising brutality coming up here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple of moments of surprising brutality.
There's constant brutality in this. Yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah. And this is...
She shoots his face off.
Yeah.
Yep. This is Kay, right?
Yep. Yeah.
But she's different than the other girl, right?
No, that's the same girl.
That's the girl who he rescued at the beginning.
He rescued, but who was hanging out with him at school when they were all...
Just some random teenager.
Oh, some random teenager, okay. Oh, yeah, then these guys. I like the fact that she's, like, in shock.
Yeah.
I really...
The
way it's handled is good. I mean, there's a lot of brutality in this one. The violence is just, like... But at least it's comping to its violence. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's Tetsuo.
Wee Tetsuo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's the first day at school.
It's his first day being abandoned at the orphanage, more to the point.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
They abandoned him at the orphanage?
His parents left him there.
Oh, man. And that's where he met...
That's where he met Kaneda.
Kaneda, yeah. The day, of course, that Akira did his thing.
No, it's not. He's just having memories being merged.
I know.
But, yeah.
I get that part.
Okay.
But still, I like that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
The way the cracks went up the shadows. See, this gives me empathy for him. It's just like, you know, what's going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
But then the way that, see, the thing is, the way they draw him visually, he's drawn to be unattractive.
Yeah.
Right.
And that clearly was a choice to make him that way. No matter what the situation there was, they drew him like that. And this is our first introduction to, I don't remember her name.
The precognitive little girl.
From Minority Report?
I believe that was her next film, yes.
Yes. I think she's better in this one. I think she's number 25.
You know, they knew that they lost control of Akira in the first place, and then they had Tetsuo, and the colonel warned the scientist about putting measures in place to control him, and apparently, like, nobody actually acted on that action item.
Well, I think one of the things about the scientist is you know, we see him being like, I'll be able to control it the whole time through, and then finally everything goes kablooey.
It looks like Albert Hughes is directing the
2013. That's what I heard, Albert Hughes.
Yeah,
Albert...
I guess one of the Hughes brothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess who did Book of Eli.
That could be interesting.
Thank you. Exactly the word I'd use.
I've heard Book of Eli is like Zardoz for the 21st century.
Oh, well, we just did. We did Book of Eli just a couple of sessions ago.
Was it Zardoz for the 21st century?
I think Zardoz is deeper.
Mm.
Book of Eli, though, has its thing, its particular thing.
I'll have to see it.
You'll have to watch it, and you have to listen to the commentary.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the big philosophical difference between the military and scientific mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. Scientists are a bunch of romantics.
I tried telling that to Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, basically he says that the military's, he talks about the 30 years and...
That's not very long to build a city like that.
Well,
that's
really
the whole thing. Well, you see, this is what I based on, because I thought about that, but Nagasaki and Hiroshima, I think they're probably basing it on the fact that it took them a little while, but they were able to rebuild their cities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Mm. But those are some very tall buildings for 30 years.
I think like a soldier, I'll protect it even if I hate it. Because it's my job.
See, that's the interesting part, is that in that sense he's sympathetic because he is defending it. But he does some pretty unsympathetic things.
Oh, yes. Yes, he does.
Well, he's defending it from a destructive power that he's helping to create, so...
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's
such a beautiful shot.
Bit of a conflict. Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of shots where I'm just going to interrupt everyone and say, oh my God, that's such a beautiful
shot.
But if
you could, back to when you say, can you tell us what shot it is too? So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which shot was it that you thought
that
was beautiful?
That one was where it's from above and he's just framed in that big doorway so you can get an idea of the scale.
Okay. Well, all the compositions are exquisite. I mean, it's like a well-shot film.
Yeah. I love how you can see everyone's breath too.
Yeah.
And the bits of mist and ice breaking off as they open this cold storage area.
Yep. And this is where...
I think that's where Akira's remains are stored.
Yeah, 28. This is apparently the number 28 and several other things in this are references to an anime that Katsuhiro Otomo admires.
Tetsujin 28?
Yes.
Which was known in the U.S. as Gigantor.
Oh.
Yeah, not as good a name.
Well, it would be interesting to see the Japanese version and see if it's the American version was as bastardized as Battle of the Planets was versus the... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gigantor was the first anime I ever experienced. It was on TV in the U.S. when I was probably like 5 years old, and I've always loved giant robots since then.
Yeah. Boy, they've got to make...
Excuse me.
That's another film I have to watch, is Iron Giant. I've never seen that.
Oh!
Oh, it's a fantastic movie. Man... you killed a guy, but that's okay. You know, it's all over. It's in the past.
Let's go have drinks.
I don't understand.
Give yourself in to the police, and then we'll go out for drinks.
Yeah, I don't understand why he's encouraging her to turn herself in.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Because that's what you do. You tell the cops it's okay, and they say that's all right, and then you.
It's maybe because he's gotten released by the cops so many times, probably.
Or he's a teenager and
doesn't really think of consequences.
It doesn't try. I don't know. Who knows.
And now Kaneda is finally getting the idea that he might be involved in something a little bigger than him.
Hang on. It took him this long?
Yeah, he's not necessarily the brightest crayon in the box.
He was thinking with the evil part of his body.
Yeah.
That's right.
For those of you who have listened to the Zardoz commentary, you'll know what we're talking about.
That's right. The gun is good. The penis is evil. Oh boy.
I wonder who that could be. A student at a vocational training school. That's also a stretch.
If by vocation you mean a life of crime.
Yeah, fair enough. The way he's tapping his hand, if you're in judo or something like that, that's how you tap out and get someone to let go.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. And then this is our parliamentary member who's kind of a
little gopher man.
Yeah. Boy, there's some metaphor there.
Yeah.
Oh, the pro-Akira forces. Well, once her down there now in the comic book, she's a gigantic. This priestess here is a gigantically important character, and in the gigantically important. She's one of the most major. She's as major as the colonel or whatever, and yet here she's got like, maybe 45 seconds of screen time.
Well, she shows up here, and then she shows up
as things are
later,
getting destroyed. Yeah,
exactly, and she gets killed. That's interesting. So they have this, the manga, in translated for English, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. Okay.
I'd say go down to your local Borders, but you may not have a local Borders anymore.
Find your local independent comic shop.
Oh. Yes.
Or you can go to Universal City Walk. There's a great comic shop there. I mean, I'm sure there's other comic shops around, but they've got a lot. I mean, I don't know. I go to the movies there sometimes, and we stop in there.
Something interesting about Universal City Walk is if you're there after dark and they've shut things down, you'll still hear ghostly crowd noise. Because they actually pipe in crowd noise over the speakers. Yeah, I was there one night after a gig at BB King's, and it was very creepy, in a good way.
Mm. Wow.
But sir, he'll see the big board.
Notice his little Hitler mustache there.
I was gonna say he looks like the guy J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
With a gut. They're talking about controlling power. It's like, great.
And then you've got
this guy whose ego. These guys whose egos are bruised, and they're totally losing track of the.
That's fairly believable,
right?
Yeah.
Now, the concept is that the power that Akira represents is sort of the primal, creative, and destructive power of the universe, which exists as a potential within everyone. But there's like these signals that certain people have that kind of help manifest that. Is that kind of, because that's one thing that I've never really been totally clear on.
Is it like
Tetsuo came in contact with a little kid, which triggered his brain signal?
And now there's this whole, and you're leaking the whole Akira thing in order to overthrow the government. And of course, there's someone else who's leaking that to overthrow the government. But
right. So in other words, it's not just like a symbol. The interesting thing, there are so many factions working against each other to try essentially. What's he doing?
Napping.
Oh, great.
See, that's the Adam Baldwin sound.
I don't see Morgan Freeman playing that part.
That scene there kind of gives you a little more sympathy for his coup.
Yeah, exactly.
I like how the sword, the position of the sword in that thing made it look like a big pointed penis.
Yeah.
See, that's a very Blade Runner kind of shot.
It sure is.
Very.
Blade Runner is one of the films that in my mind comes the closest to being a perfect movie.
Mm. Huh. The first sign that his powers
are developing.
His telekinetic powers. You know why it's him? Because he has a large forehead.
Mm.
The signal seeks those with large foreheads.
That's right. Well, the large forehead is accompanied with a bigger brain that can access the...
The brain burns off all the hair?
The hair sort of shields the brain from emanating its power.
Oh, that's right.
I see that glass and I immediately go, But here's the thing.
Right.
So do you think he's been summoning those things from other places, all those toys that are littered on the floor?
I don't know.
No, I think those are just his toys. And then because they're in his mind, they use those forms to reveal themselves to him or to try and get to him.
Why are all those toys physically in existence on the floor? I really think that he's been manifesting them into existence and throwing them on the ground.
I don't know. My feeling is that it's a facility that's designed for talented kids, and they've probably got a bunch of toys just on hand for them.
Mm. We'll have to read the comic book and get that explained a little better.
Yeah.
I like how he's just like looking at the camera.
Now, here's what I wonder. What is it about the human psyche that makes living things that bleed milk white liquid so creepy. Like the androids in Alien and Aliens. And well, you've already seen the movie if you're listening to this commentary, probably, so it's not a spoiler, but these things start bleeding milk or whatever.
Yeah. Semen?
I don't know. Because it's cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, it's just not foreign. It's not supposed to be that color.
It's not supposed to be that color, so it's like it short circuits what you understand to be the way things are.
Yeah.
Well, on Fringe, they bleed Quicksilver, but I think that's just because they've got better special effects technology now than they did 20 years ago.
Now, this is another trope that appears in a lot of anime, the object that is a conglomeration of other objects that grows out of control and is violently destructive.
Huh.
Well, the object that is a conglomeration of other objects is actually a trope in Japanese art. If you look at Japanese art, you'll see that in a few older, you'll see that in some older works. So, of course, there are certain American, or rather European works that do it too. I'm not sure why it became more of a trope here, but.
But you see it in other animes too, like Spirited Away for just one example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least.
I hate
you know,
it when my Legos do that.
Yeah. Blocko, those are Blocko.
Oh.
Is that what it is?
That's a Simpsons reference.
Okay. Yeah, what's with the milk? I know, at this point I'm like...
oh, it actually is milk. I never noticed
yeah,
that before.
Yeah,
but it actually
say,
is milk.
He did say it was milk. Yeah, I thought you knew that, yeah. But the milk is kind of very sticky and it just kind of stays on them as opposed to...
God.
That's
that...
the thing. It's like a small-scale realistic act of violence or a physical pain like that is so much more cringing than like having your arm blown off and replaced by technology.
I must have seen this like 20 times and still every time he steps on that glass, it makes me cringe.
One of my favorite moments was sitting in a movie theater watching Videodrome, the Cronenberg film.
You saw that in the theater? Holy crap.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's all these parts where there's all sorts of latex effects and people shoving video cassettes into their chest cavities and stuff like that, which is pretty gross. But the audience really reacted when James Woods and Deborah Harry are having sex and he pierces her ear with a pin.
You know, one thing I never noticed about this movie until now is that the other little kids are actually ganging up on him, too. So it's Tetsuo is once again being ganged up on.
He's being ganged up all around. Yeah. But the dynamic, it's not that they're ganging up on him and bullying him. They're actually...
They're serving their protective function.
They're forming a force against him, which makes you, in a way, makes you feel for Tetsuo. Though you shouldn't.
Yeah, even though they're justified in doing it, from his perspective, you can see how...
He's being opposed. He's just like, he's changing, and he doesn't, you know, it's like he doesn't want to change. We just don't get we don't get the benefit of, I will do something sympathetic so you can feel something more for me and manipulate you to feel more for me.
Yeah.
As opposed to, we should just feel for him.
Yeah, the kids never do anything to try and help him. They just flat out start by attacking him.
You really kind of get the idea after you watch a lot of anime that a lot of anime creators are not all that interested in the depths of human emotions.
Well, they're not sympathetic, I think, is more what it is.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is
gross.
Oh, God,
yeah.
Man. And the guy's hand just falls from the ceiling. That's great. I mean, I thought that was, wow, that was it's gross, but it's very effective.
Yeah. I mean, man, make that role empathetic. Cast Justin Bieber. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, never happened. Justin Bieber blowing people up like that, exploding them from the inside.
It would be a way for him to change his image. Oh, you know who else? Daniel Radcliffe.
I don't think he wants to change his image.
Daniel Radcliffe would want to change his image. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Daniel Radcliffe. We are officially campaigning for Daniel Radcliffe as Tetsuo.
Yep.
What about, he might be too old now, but what about Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Kaneda?
He's a little too old, but yeah, he'd be a good choice.
Actually, in one of the castings, they were talking about him as Tetsuo.
Uh-huh.
He'd be very good at that, but again, he's way too old.
When they were talking about Leo DiCaprio as Kaneda.
Leo DiCaprio's
I'm looking at it right here on the internet.
DiCaprio's like 20 years too old for that role, man.
Of course he is. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's about 10 years too old.
Yep.
This is good. So
well done here.
I never noticed the rats with maggots before.
Oh yeah.
And I've seen rats with maggots coming out of them.
Ew! Bloated rat, he said.
Yeah. And the theory.
One of the things that I like about this scene is like a whole bunch of shit goes down, and then Condado shows that he's actually useful in some way.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's what I found interesting about it. Yeah, exactly. His particular skill, or one of his skills, now actually as the hero comes in handy.
Yeah. Oh, I never noticed the hand that was adhered to that gun until just now. Yeah, she picks it up and there's still a hand attached to it that's been severed at the mid-forearm.
Oh, man, that is awesome. I like the music that just starts.
I like how she's not some screaming helpless, you know, damsel in distress. She's looking for the gun to recoil havoc here.
The music in this is so amazing. I must have, in the early 90s, I must have listened to this soundtrack like every day. The music was also written before the movie was animated, which is why sometimes the music seems to cut off a little abruptly.
Oh. Oh, man.
Ow.
That's going to hurt.
Yeah, well, but.
That's what he does.
Yep. And?
Oh, that's
again, that would be so easy to do with a 3D animation program.
Yeah, but not with not by hand.
Yeah.
Well, no, not practically, no. Oh, well, no, yeah.
And Kaneda just like, man, that is so. I mean.
A little luck there.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
See, the problem with trying to cast this is there aren't a lot of actors in that age range that you can really think of unless you watch, like, the Disney Channel or, you know, Nickelodeon or something.
Well,
some of those
not necessarily,
shows.
But like on the 90210, those shows would cast basically 18 for younger shows you can find people. I mean, there are a lot of actors.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd have to go with unknowns.
Yeah, that's the really thing. They're not a lot of really well-known.
If you want to do that, but it doesn't sound like that's necessarily. I still think Zack Snyder's the guy to do this, but whatever.
You know, I got to say, Zack Snyder is the kind of action director that people want when they're complaining about Michael Bay, because he's a really strong visualist, but his visuals always support the forward movement of the scene.
Right.
And he lets you understand the geography of the scene. It's not cut so fast and shot so spastically that you can't tell where you are. He really seems to. Well, have a pretty well integrated sense of things like that.
But he also has a sense of something
point,
resembling human emotion.
Yeah.
Whereas Michael Bay doesn't.
Yeah.
So at some point, Tetsuo managed to get it together enough that he put a Band-Aid on his foot, but he's also drooling.
Maybe his subconscious telekinesis managed to bandage his foot.
There they go. See, okay, now we've been watching this. Now we're about almost an hour in, and you know, basically where the plot's going now is Tetsuo is, they're trying to fight back with Tetsuo and where this is going to go.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, of course, where does this go, and then where does the movie go afterwards? It doesn't make a left turn, but it just kind of starts going off.
Yeah.
Off over there, because then essentially part of itself fulfills itself. He does escape.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? Then what do you do? But we'll see in a few minutes. It's just the interesting part.
This really reminds me of some of the scenes in Ghost in the Shell 2: Innocence,
mm-hmm.
where they go into the they get trapped in the mind loop in that mansion, which is another excellent movie, by the way.
Yeah.
So now he's shown that he's stronger than they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were, you know, still threatening him. They were
and notice the echo of him stepping on the glass with him stepping on that.
Right.
This is interesting because it sort of symbolizes the destruction of his child childish views of the world in a way.
Yeah, but notice how, you know, that whole you're a cretin die, you know,
Well, you know, it's demonstrating that they have all these advanced powers, but they still view things as children.
Yeah.
In a real simplistic way.
Yeah. I think there's also the implication with Tetsuo is that his acquisition of powers really basically corrupts him.
Yeah.
And he has no idea how to handle it. Whereas the others handled it a little better.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
She's talking through Kay.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the kids are banging on the door from outside. Why is she in a gigantic glass bubble? I would like to know that.
Because she's Lady Gaga. Okay, that was a little lame. I think it was good.
No, I thought it was all
right. Did you get a card for that?
I don't know. What was up with that at the Grammys?
She said she spent 3 days in that egg, which makes me wonder, did she perform all her bodily functions in that egg? Because that's just gross.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Lady Gaga doesn't have bodily functions.
Yes, she does.
It's the battle with the mind.
It's like in Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Lean forward and grimace.
Yeah, look constipated.
Exactly.
That's the problem, though, is it's very difficult to show what a battle of a mind looks like.
Aren't you supposed to put your fingers up by your temple?
I think looking constipated is a good one. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It's like, how the hell do I act that? Yep, this is what happens when you mess with the primal forces of nature.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, so why is she in a glass bubble?
She is in a glass bubble.
It doesn't seem like it has any access hatch in case she needs to get out or anything.
Or a bathroom.
Yeah.
Or a way to get fed. Okay, so basically we're at the 1 hour mark, and so now this is where he brings up that Akedam is.
Yeah.
This is like where the film's going to go now.
Yeah, yep. It's almost like two movies.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the midpoint. This is where you'd have it, essentially. He's now acquired enough powers and is bad enough. He's becoming an antagonist, and now he wants to find Akedam.
Yeah, get some resolution to figure out what the hell
resolution,
is happening
get
with
more
him.
Power, exactly, but he knows that he needs to find him.
And this beautiful moment. This is a great shot right here with them hovering outside of the elevator door.
Right.
And I swear I've seen that actually used in a movie, but I can't remember what it was. Some science fiction movie I've seen that used in.
Oh, wow. Zack Snyder.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Zack Snyder.
Yeah, Zack Snyder's the guy for this movie.
Tetsuo, Master of the Playroom.
Yep. Ooh, nice. That was a nice dolly shot back from him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So well done.
Animated.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other films that this director has done?
Well, Katsuhiro Otomo was the writer. I don't believe he directed this. It was done by the Akira Committee, which was just a group of
filmmakers to make it from the... Okay, I see.
Yeah, I'm not sure who actually is credited as the director on this.
Because in terms of handling it, the animation and just basically how it was essentially conceived shot-wise is really great. And the animation, of course, making drop, you have to draw it under a direction of some sort. They are children.
And it's about the fight for dominance. So many, as so many things are.
Yeah, I think I'd say it's fair to say at this point that he's paramad.
He has an evil laugh.
Well, the music also supports this.
Yeah.
And she's still sympathetic. She's just like, I'm trying to help you.
And
now we're getting really wacky.
Yeah. Okay. All this, and he can fly, too.
That's a very disorienting angle.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Oh, it's down and then back. Ooh.
See, now, earlier in the movie, Masaru is presented as kind of almost being a little bit of a mastermind in his suit and that little chair, and now he seems like he's just one of the kids.
Yeah.
And there we go once again with the Adam Baldwin grimace and eye thing.
Yeah.
You know, they've just, if they make a live action version, they've got to make the Colonel less of Mr. Exposition Man.
Yeah.
The Adam Baldwin growl once again. Or else. This is the scene. Yeah, this is... I think in the original translation, they kind of softened this up somehow.
Yeah.
You know who would be good as the Colonel is Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne would be really good as the Colonel.
Oh, that's right. And so you should shoot him when you think that? Great.
Yeah. Be my puppet instead.
Literally killing the messenger.
Yep.
Yeah. Which was probably the best part of 300.
Yeah.
Well, 300 had a lot of good parts, but that was like, whoa. Only because, well, whatever.
Is that actually Gerard Butler's only good movie?
Yes.
Sorry, Gerard.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy apparently, but whoa, some of those choices. Adults own. Oh, that's right.
The bar.
The bar that says fuck you.
Yep. Oh, you don't know who you're messing with, buddy. Dun dun. Sometime later.
The capsules are, that's the, what's on the back of his jacket, right?
Did he talk
about? Yeah. Okay. They also refer to some of the technology in the testing facility as capsules.
Whoa. Yeah.
He says the implication is that these guys essentially do drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. About him dead. See, but that's like disappointing. It's like if the implication is then show it, you know, if they, as opposed to
just implying it.
Well, just implying it.
Yeah.
Well, not just implying it by having them have drugs painted on the back of their jackets.
That's not good enough for me. I want to see it.
Well, Tetsuo has done some here. Yeah. The guy playing the sort of secondary friend there, did you ever see Fright Night?
No.
He sounds just like the actor who played the freaky little friend in Fright Night.
Yeah, Tetsuo's definitely lost it now. This is, you see, now this is the part where I started getting lost. I started disconnecting from the movie a little. I don't know why, but this is where I guess the forward motion I've been feeling before was kind of gone. Which is interesting.
Yeah, the drive really did kind of, does kind of stop here a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yep.
Say one thing, subtitle another.
This is like a little exposition recap.
Yeah, exactly.
For everyone who's been lost.
Since you didn't read about 1,500 pages of the graphic novel, let us encapsulate it all to you in the next 5 minutes.
That's right. And maybe that's structurally, that's part of, in other words, maybe this is a part of the structure where you need to deftly spin into your other direction, and it wasn't deftly spun enough, so that's why we get this feeling, at least for me.
Yeah.
Where is this going now? And then you have this. You have the recap. Well, this is where we've been, and this is where we have to go, so we're going to go. Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, really, this is, I mean, this is animation, and it's boring because they're in a room, which looks really good in how dingy it looks, but.
This is the place where things get a little like fuzzy. There were genes in space dust.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, the science programs in these kids' schools has just gone downhill.
That's right. And she talks about the beginning of the universe. She's talking about the base. You know, basically what comes up at the end. Yeah. I understand that they have to plant this stuff, but now it's getting like real esoteric about like, well, if we, I don't know.
Yeah.
I get it, but.
This is sort of like,
What
if an amoeba got given a human's powers? So this is like, we are the equivalent of amoebas, and we've been given the powers that are as far from ours as humans are from amoebas.
That's what happens. And I'm all for that, the message, the warning being delivered, but write it so that it's not all, we're sitting here explaining it to each other. Oh, really? It doesn't move the
At least be discussing it on the way to where they're going.
Yeah.
It doesn't move the drama, but there's no negotiation with someone else. There's no fight for power. There's no trying to get something else. The plot's not moving ahead.
I think it can be valuable for a filmmaker to kind of slow something down before building up to a big finale, but I think this is not an example of that happening effectively.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that they're prisoners. I got that part, but really? I don't know.
The door's been popped open by our freaky gray friends.
By Kyoko.
I think.
Yeah, it was by Kyoko. She spoke through Kay.
But what kind of a trap? I mean, you were already in a locked room.
Yeah.
You lure you out so they can lock you up somewhere?
So that they can catch you doing something worse and then lock
now
you up somewhere.
Okay,
worse.
So they're going through here and they're walking. This is where they could have talked about all this stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to in that scene where they're just in the room, unless somehow it's stunningly interesting. But in animation, I'd find that kind of hard. you know. I mean, you're talking about basically a visual film that's been moving, moving, moving. Then we have one scene in that room. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so now.
See, stuff like this actually looks like downtown LA. That's why I feel like it should really be Los Angeles and not New York City.
Yeah.
All right. I think it should be New Las Vegas.
I think...
Neo Las Vegas.
Ooh.
No, actually, no, Neo San Francisco.
That okay. That would be interesting.
I think that's... Because San Francisco, if you think about, you know, what cities represent what in our psyche, San Francisco is like the cultural center. Mm. Is it right? Well, New York kind of is, but San Francisco is like other culture. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
I might be finding connections that aren't actually real, but there was another Pat Labor movie. I think it was called Pat Labor W13 or something like that.
Oh.
And they just had Word 13. And in that Pat Labor movie, they lure the big bad into a sports stadium to try to contain it. And in one of the Gamera movies from the 90s, they also lure the bad dinosaur bird into a sports stadium to try to contain it.
Is something symbolic about a sports stadium?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's a convenient, large, open space that can, you know, in some way be contained, I suppose.
And this is the stuff where they unpack it now, and really we needed this unpacked in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Right, yeah. And we're 75 minutes in.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's a clown.
Yeah, clown graffiti.
Yeah.
Had to be clowns. Those are cool bikes.
Yeah.
Or at least they sound cool.
A little bit of a Rebel Without a Cause music moment there. Well, for...
What did he just do? He wrecked the bike?
Yeah, he ran the bike into the wall. That was Yamagata's bike, because Yamagata's dead.
It's kind of like a Viking funeral.
Okay, and I'm sorry. Who was Yamagata?
Yamagata was the guy who Tetsuo killed in the bar, the young kid.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't show him killing it, but it's right, assumed. Which,
okay, I didn't know that was his name.
And there goes Kay walking on water. This is really cool, this whole, the way that, and he just plunges right in and she's walking on water, and the way that they do the focal point so that she's all blurred in front and he's...
Now, is there a reason they take Kay away? Right.
It may just be because that's who the little girl has chosen to speak through.
She's Yoda.
Yeah.
That's who she is.
Yeah.
So we're going to get Frank Oz to play her?
No. No. No, you know who would be great to play her? A little too old, but Chloe Moretz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hit Girl. Or Hayley Stanfield. Okay, kidding.
That was the girl in True Grit, right?
Yeah.
Which we haven't seen yet.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to. Oh my! Oh, this is just not funny. I mean, it is, but it's just not.
Yeah,
I like a sort of old world and decadent there.
It's just it's just got there is a certain of its time and Japanese culture type of thing that we're not getting. I mean, we're just trying to translate this type of thing to our culture, and it's not. I mean, we can relate it, but it's not related to our circumstances. That's why it's kind of tough.
Well, it's the military overthrowing the government, but at the same time, you can see that the government, you know, or at least this particular member, has done some very terrible things and is trying to...
Right.
You know, you'd think if I were writing this now, I'd have him having a helicopter meet him on the roof, but that's interesting, all of the... Clearly, two people just committed suicide in the bathtub.
Right.
Two of his members.
And this guy is...
He's the guy, Ryu, he was the guy who was leading Kay's group, the insurgent.
That's what
people.
I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was working with this guy.
He was working with this guy. You know, and you can see that Ryu is probably pretty pure of heart.
He's a true believer. Right.
Well, yeah, he is. And of course, he gets killed for it.
Yep. And there's a true bleeder.
And he should, of course.
And he was apparently actually in love with Kay, so you get that.
Oh, okay.
I love that. Please, I have to catch a flight at noon, you know, things like that. You know, it's like still people sort of have their life still goes on. Oh, man.
That was a well-drawn explosion.
Oh, yeah.
We have the music.
I love this music. It's one of the best soundtracks of all time. And that's also why you've got to cast someone young as Tetsuo just to ram that home.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's because they're all kids.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a futuristic anime version of The Outsiders.
Yeah, kind of.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
Which, that's a novel that still could stand a really good movie adaptation.
Mm.
I'd never read the book, so did you not like the movie adaptation?
Didn't care for it. Too stylized. It needed to be much more raw and real and intimate and closer to the book. It's been a long time. I'm not sure how close to the book it was, but I thought it was the filmmaker trying to put his stamp on something rather than really honoring the material.
I'm guessing you didn't like Rumblefish then.
Did not care for it. I mean, I liked looking at it, but it didn't really do anything for me emotionally.
Right.
The interesting thing about this, of course, is that there's this cult of Akira, and this gives us an idea that it's much more widespread than just a couple of cultists, but...
You know, and that's actually, strangely enough, I don't even see... There's a lot packed into this movie. And I don't. And obviously, it's been reduced from the manga.
Yeah.
How would you even put it into a 2-hour American movie? That's the thing.
Or yeah. Well, that's why they're talking about
2-hour ones, because you have the cult. I mean, the cult of Akira, as you said before, is important. And it just.
Yeah.
I see why they didn't really do anything with it here.
You could do that world building thing where you develop a bunch of websites first and lead people to them, where they can kind of discover.
I think it's worth a TV series
or
mini series to let all those things develop, and that's where you can really have. All those different aspects.
I feel so bad for Ryu. He's one of the characters that I actually empathize with because he, you know, he was at least trying to do what he thought was right.
Yeah.
Is he trying to kill himself?
No,
he's having a heart attack or something.
Yeah. And he's trying to take nitroglycerin.
Many nitroglycerins and it's not working.
Yeah.
And Ryu, he basically dies here too.
Yep. And he's got that dollar bill stuck to his, or yen stuck to his leg, and there goes the revolution. And notice the little smile on his face as he sees it.
Mm.
At least somebody gets what they want out of this movie.
Yeah.
Huh. Good luck on that one. Now that was hand drawn. I mean, it's hand drawn. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's their friend from school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Tetsuo's girlfriend.
Oh, okay. There's the jacket, and there's the bike.
All, like, one surviving member.
Dude, you are the only remaining gang member.
Well, at least you got to appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that we had to have dialogue to describe what we're seeing.
Yeah.
But so there we have, so this is the priestess again, this is the second time we've seen her.
Yeah, but she's kind of reduced to this cult figure, and she's much more of a political manipulator in the book.
Yeah, I think right. If we had kind of more of her subplot in the movie, we'd see more of the social movement thing, which would be really interesting.
Yeah, if I recall the book correctly, she is not exactly pure of heart either. She is using the movement to her own ends.
Yeah,
right.
It's so often true.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And that would be part, like, in a miniseries. Then you could do that. For a movie, you've just got to get the point was to, it's about Tetsuo, Canada, helping him, essentially. That's what it is. And in that sense, it fulfills this. But in the process, because all that stuff was part of the source material and it's removed, I mean, at least it's my belief, it just takes away from part of what makes the whole thing live, in a way. Oh, this whole thing.
That's so grim.
This is grim. Because everyone just basically gets killed.
Yeah. Well, except Tetsuo.
I think this is where he proves himself to be a little bit on the selfish side.
Yeah, you know, a wee bit.
This brings up something interesting that is something that I thought was fatally lacking from the Incredible Hulk movies that they made.
Which I didn't see.
In this, they're sort of worshiping or supporting this force that indiscriminately kills, and they are also its victims. Whereas in the Hulk movies, they're portraying rage and the power of rage, but I never felt in those movies like anybody that was close to David Banner was ever actually in danger, when the nature of rage is that it lashes out in all directions without discriminating between the people that are close by.
Well, but that's because they were chicken.
Yes. It was like they didn't understand the nature of their own character.
I love the heat ripples that are running over him as he was striding forward there.
Yeah. Oh, so he's at the stadium now. So he's trying to find... That's right. He's trying to find Akira.
Right.
Yeah, let's bury the most destructive force in the universe under the largest place where people will ever gather.
Yeah. And now, you know, here's their soul energy is converging or whatever.
That's his.
At any rate, that's
his monitor, right? That he can tell what's going on.
Right, exactly. And Tetsuo's energy is beginning to replicate Akira's energy, which is not good.
What is this?
That's I believe that's the elevator down to where Akira is stored. Akira, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, all you people who actually speak Japanese. Akira. I'm sure my accent is awful.
Well, hopefully, someone in Japan who speaks Japanese is listening to this.
And saying, my God, you Americans, you don't know anything.
I doubt it, but maybe.
Tetsuo still has that headache. Hey, I understand. I, too, have had bad headaches that would lead me to destroy the world just to get them to go away.
No, that's pretty bad. Oh, and
yeah, I may be lying a little bit. And there's Kay, who at this point is just a tool of the Gray Kids. She looks a little like Sigourney Weaver, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver can play this part. I'm just kidding. Kidding.
Didn't we see an actress recently on some show who we thought was like, okay, if you're going to cast someone to play a young version of Sigourney Weaver, that's who it would be.
Yeah, I can't remember who, though.
Okay.
So that's real helpful for our audience.
Yeah. Sorry, audience.
There's a good crop of actors, young actors who we've never heard of who are coming up.
Be
suitable for all these parts. If we were doing it. Oh, man, look at this. Everyone's
Which we're
dead.
Not. Yeah,
Everyone's
I know.
Dead. We could make our own fan version live action when we could shoot it out here in the valley somewhere.
It'd be our own fan version, a Zack Snyder style fan version of Akira.
Yeah. Yeah, on a $20 budget.
No, 30.
That kind of limitation really liberates your creativity.
That's right, because poverty makes you work really hard.
No, we're not.
Who needs $200 million? Nah.
You just become a 30. Slave to the money.
Mm. Exactly. I'll do it with 30. $1,000? No, $30. You know, I'm watching this. I'm like, what the hell is this?
That's the airlock in which Akira is kept.
That's the whole Akira airlock.
It's the Akira pod. The Akira pod. Akira pod.
Akira pod. Yeah, you know, I'm seeing this happening. I'm not staying there and staring. I think I'm running the other way.
Yeah.
You would be amazed at how many people stood around and stared when the towers were... Anyway.
True, but it wasn't a huge pod rising out of the ground.
With supernatural forces. But then again, even if you ran away, you would ultimately would have been subsumed by the...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they clarify enough, like, whether Kay has her own powers or whether she's just being used as the physical manifestation of the three great kids.
My take is that if Tetsuo's power began because he had contact with that little gray kid, then she would end up manifesting powers on her own eventually, too.
Yeah. I think that for the kid in the floating wheelchair, you'd cast the kid who plays Manny on Family Guy, or not Family Guy on Modern Family.
Modern Family.
No,
yeah.
he has the gravitas for it. Clearly,
yeah, he does. Well, and the other one could be the kid who plays Luke.
Yeah,
Luke on
Family Guy.
Modern Family.
Modern Family. Sorry.
And Tetsuo could be Stewie from Family Guy. I'm going to go find Akira, and I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah, how can they not have done this yet on Family Guy? They've really got to do this on Family Guy.
They've been too busy with their Star Wars ones.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, I hope I just didn't get Seth MacFarlane in trouble.
Seth MacFarlane, we would like you to do, like you to do this, if you would.
I just don't think this is big enough here. I just don't think enough people know about it. But
no,
hopefully...
but Seth MacFarlane is a big geek.
Okay, well, good. All right. Well, Seth MacFarlane, I know you listen to Film Grok all the time, and you will definitely be listening all the way through to this part. So you got to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, except he'd do all the voices, too.
Which would be awesome.
Okay. We're cool with that.
Except Patrick Warburton might do some. Oh, Patrick Warburton would make a good colonel.
He'd be too funny. He'd be a comedy.
Okay.
I don't think that... I can't remember how this works out in the comic, but somehow I don't think they found Akira in a bunch of glass jars.
No.
I'm not sure.
I like that they found him in jars. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. The idea that they took him and they basically stripped him apart is just so disgusting, but mm-hmm. so in keeping with all this.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, Soul? What the heck, Soul? No, I know.
They're going to get Barry White in there.
That's what I thought. I'm like,
Soul for shit out of luck.
Yeah.
Oh, we have the crazy laugh.
Yep.
What is it? They're like, oh, yeah, please come back with us because we're going to treat you nice after you've killed all these people.
Well, also, like, we've had so much evidence of your ability to destroy anything that's within your field of view. And so we're just going to, like, ride on in and talk to you.
That's right. Yeah. Please come back to us. I love the stickers that you mentioned. It's great. Great bike. Yeah, I'm just saving your lives and you call me an asshole. Fine.
And this is Kaneda's, you know, if someone's going to kill him, it's going to be me.
Wow, that's his brain and his spine. That is just so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of reminds me of another possible director for a live action version would be Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
So thinking of
action wise, though.
Well, you know, he did those Hellboy movies.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of the Hellboy movies.
I'm more of a fan of his foreign films than his domestic films.
Yeah, the domestic films kind of this foreign films are more effective.
They're more personal to him, I think.
Yeah. Hellboy was it looked decent, but it didn't do much for me.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
I had to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino, but then there'd be a bunch of extraneous dialogue about...
But it would be good extraneous dialogue. Quentin Tarantino's got to do a science fiction film of some sort.
Yeah.
He has got to. I don't know if this is necessarily the one, but...
Oh...
Kaneda, your sense of self-preservation is really limited.
But he's got this whole dominance thing, because for him, he is a dominant. He's dominant over Tetsuo.
You know, okay, you're trying to kill him. Why are you going to give him a warning? By the way, look over here so I can shoot you.
Yeah, I wondered about that,
because
too.
Because he's not very smart, or he's not written smart.
He's honorable.
Yeah.
Well, once again, that goes back to the cultural thing. And I think there are things in there that we don't get, as opposed to bad writing. That's what I'm trying to distinguish.
And there are, and even in American culture, there's this whole, I'm not going to shoot him in the back. What are you, crazy? He's a supernaturally powerful human being. Of course you're going to shoot him in the back if you can.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, he's there. Shoot him.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but maybe at the last second he'll be good. Ooh, that was a good shot. You know, I find it's interesting, because we know what's going to happen to his arm, that his cape is actually torn there and his shoulders revealed. I think it's an interesting visual. Whoa. Well, he did shoot him finally. And it didn't do anything.
Because he's out of juice. Oh. Yeah.
Fight with your. What is this, Star Trek? It's the second pilot for Star Trek. Where no man has gone before.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he's Gary Lockwood.
Uh huh.
And you see
Hey.
Oh, sorry. You can clip that out. No. Mark, look at the time. It's 1:06:37.
No.
It's parody.
Hmm.
Fair use.
No. Oh, don't even talk about fair use.
You can auto-tune it so there's no melody.
I'll let them find me first.
And there we go, our shit-out-of-luck satellite.
There's SOL. That looks like the satellite in UFO.
Unidentified flying oddball?
No. The TV show UFO...
Never.
You're unfamiliar?
No.
Do you remember Space 1999?
Oh, yeah. I remember it very dimly.
Predecessor to Space 1999 is UFO. It was a series made in 1970, takes place in 1980, where they have an organization that protects the Earth.
It was a live-action one done by the people who did Super Marionation.
Oh. Well, yeah, which was the people who did Space 1999.
Yeah.
Jerry Anderson. And
I would just like to point out, he just got his arm cut off, and it's really kind of awful.
It is.
Maybe that's why they're thinking of James Franco for this role.
There goes Saul again. Like, what? Lasers shooting from the sky.
It's like the GoldenEye satellite.
It's Star Wars. For all you kids out there,
that's the early
80s when the missile defense system was called euphemistically Star Wars. It was stupid as all get out.
And Tetsuo going up there to take care of the satellite.
This is funny.
Yeah.
This is where it's like, where is it? Like, now we're really out of this world.
Well, you know, if you put on a red cape, that gives you the ability to fly. Like Superman.
Well, no, he has protected himself in that red, force field.
Yeah.
Now, just to clarify this, he brings the satellite down, or does he
sure does.
Yeah, he does.
No, he sure brings it.
Then what is shooting down all across the sky if he brings the satellite down? He's activated the other ones to shoot?
No, that's rubble. The satellite shatters, and it's all the bits of the satellite burning up in atmosphere.
Well, he's taking control of the satellite, and Tetsuo is firing it.
Okay.
And then it breaks up, and then you see the pieces flying into the atmosphere.
All right.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Battle Los Angeles promos.
Yes.
I like the whole get on where.
See, this is where it gets goofy. Well, I think it's okay.
Well, you know, it's they're doing their best, but.
Yeah. Oh. And... It didn't take them away. There we go. Saul, baby, Saul.
And the colonel's like, well, crap.
Of course, it only falls over Neo Tokyo, but whatever. I like the music at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the scientist, all he's doing is he's just watching the thing that's telling him what's going on.
Yep.
Which tells us what's going on.
And he thinks it's the, you know, this is the scientist divorced from reality. Hey, we've created yet another person who could destroy the world. That's magnificent.
Right. This is cool when he creates an arm for himself.
Yeah.
Now they get into the whole thing of we can choose a future thing. Where did that come from?
Yeah, that could have been trimmed out without me missing anything.
But it's, yeah. But it's like, all right, but what does that have to do with what we've
been? She has prognostication powers.
Oh, so she sees,
and,
okay, I got
and
it.
And they've been kind of creating the future that other people want them to create for a while, so now...
Okay, gotcha. So
now children are doing it for themselves, which I will not sing, just so as not to create a copyright issue.
Well, it's not so much copyright as copyright, but okay, all right. And he's right. I mean, you know, it's amazing. It's science. It's you have to study it. If it's happening in front of you, you can't just completely ignore it.
Right, exactly. But the whole point is that he was supposed to say, you know, stop it before it got to this point. And...
But, well, the only way you could stop it is what, by killing them?
By inventing something that could project a cancellation signal.
There's definitely a slight hatred of science in this film.
Yeah, well, you know, scientists always have no emotion and make stupid decisions. It's kind of a cinematic trope.
It is.
I don't think it's Neil deGrasse Tyson. Awesome. I don't think it's a characteristic in real life, but...
Exactly. It's not.
The evil scientist is alive and well in the movies.
Well,
but I think maybe it's more of a thing... I'm going to just stretch it. More of a thing in Japanese culture because technology was very destructive to their culture. With the bomb.
A cute little humorous moment for
yuck, yuck, yuck.
There's also that kind of idea in science of, you know, even if we didn't invent the bomb, somebody would because it's science and it's knowledge and it's out there and ultimately somebody would invent it. So there's this whole...
So we should invent it first.
Well, yeah, there's a whole idea of like being divorced from the consequences of their actions, no matter how destructive they are.
But it's it's essentially science is, well, there's science and technology. And yeah. I mean,
this whole Olympic throne thing, I don't think they have thrones at the Olympics, do they?
Maybe in 30 years they will.
Mm.
For the 20.
Except it's not. It's for the like, 2020 it's like to- not. It's Tokyo 8 Olympics. Years now. This is all 8 years away. You know, the thing about this is, aside from, you know, the kids with supernatural powers, a lot of the stuff in this, the technology isn't all that removed from what we have now.
Like
they still have TVs and the bikes don't seem like the bikes aren't hover bikes and, you know.
Okay.
And for a movie that's got so much technology kind of driving it, they don't focus a lot on the specifics of the technology,
right.
Which is a good way to avoid making predictions that will end up turning out to be wrong.
Yeah.
Though they don't have cell phones.
True.
buddy, you can't hide it. You got a metal arm. It's going onto the throne. Now, that's a very... In Tetsuo the Iron Man, that was definitely part of that. The whole idea of kind of the marriage of the body with technology.
Yeah. This happens a bit in Videodrome, too, with the gun that sends out the cables into his arm.
Mm.
My favorite line of Videodrome, see you in Pittsburgh. And then, of course, what happens after that? Dude blows up.
Well, the colonel kind of does have the earpiece and stuff that you would have in a cell phone.
Ah, okay. All right.
So.
Really, scientists? You just told us something we don't know? Okay.
Wouldn't that be like the best case scenario that he just like blows his own brain?
I don't understand what you come back with this. You could die. Come back with us. Come back with us. Come back with us. I mean, I understand, but in terms of writing it, there's other things you can do.
Yeah.
I understand that would happen in real life.
Yeah.
This is a movie. You got to write it a little better.
Well, Kaori is reasonably horrified by him, but at the same time in love with him, and that I think is fairly well drawn.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And they make her they actually succeed in making look like she's a young teenager.
Yeah.
Oh man.
This part is a little on the gross side.
Oh, everything after here gets just gross.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty gross, being enveloped by pulsing flesh.
And technology. Oh, there he is. I don't know, go ahead.
Apparently, to get the sound of Kaneda's motorbike, they used a combination of a 20s Harley and a jet engine.
Nice. I have a bit of a problem with Kaneda. I mean, I understand. He's got to kill him because Tetsuo is dangerous and everything. There's just something about it that bugs me. I don't know what it is. It's like there's not enough of a struggle in Kaneda about it.
Mm-hmm.
For the purposes of the story
and
telling us.
Yeah, it really kind of detaches from a real personal kind of thing into being forces that are larger than any of the individuals without really giving you some sort of central character to, you know, have a stake in.
Yeah, I mean, here he is. He's having to kill essentially one of his best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm just doing it. I'm just, okay, I've got to do it. There's a disconnect. Now, once again, that could be a cultural thing in terms of how you tell a story.
But you saw him just hesitate. He had the yes. shot and he hesitated.
Yes, he did. Because once again, maybe, I don't know.
I don't think it's just the horror. I think it's also, oh my God, this is my friend.
Yeah. And sees this out me. And he wants to help him. So now we get to see him. That's kind of what I wanted to see more of before.
And this is just...
It's just like every piece of the body is hanging off of there.
Yep. And this, where the kind of weird hand reaches out to her and the fingers each divide into their own fingers. I mean, it's just really... Oh. And the kids are just kind of praying to Akira, or more to the point, psychically trying to put him back together again.
Yeah.
That to me looked like she got crushed to death.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is gross.
Yep. Well, you know, kind of hard to do when I'm embedded in your flesh like a splinter in your foot.
That's right.
He finally decides to walk away from it all.
Yeah.
Now,
okay, I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah, really? Oh, he shot his way out.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just completely hallucinatory, weird awfulness.
Yeah, that's Adam Baldwin.
Yes, because a handgun will help me against the gigantic stadium-sized monster.
You go to war with a giant mutating being with the weapons you have, not with the weapons you want.
Oh, thank you.
It'd be funny if that, like, all rolled over a billboard and then peeled back and it'd pick up the picture off the billboard. Oh. Like, Silly Putty.
This is like The Blob. Okay, guys. Yeah, you've got to wait. Oh, that's right. They managed to succeed.
Well, yep.
Oh, so they're getting Akira to reform himself. Okay. Because I could have broken those jars for them, you know. I could have done that.
I think it wasn't just breaking the jars. I think it's all about the way you break them.
Okay, all right. Just making sure.
Well, you know, you can't make a child-involved omelet without breaking some glass jars involving that child's body parts.
Ooh, that was good.
Hello, genital.
Apparently,
Akira.
Yeah, they lost one of the capsules.
That's right. I like, what does he say? I don't know how he could tell, because I'm looking at it, I can't tell what it says.
Well, but basically, it's that little nuclear thing happening all over again.
Yeah, he says, what's the beginning? It's the beginning of the universe. Oh, that's, she transports him, because that's going to... That's what it is. The woman who plays Lisa Simpson. That, oh, she sounds just like her.
Nancy Cartwright.
Nancy Cartwright. No. Nancy Cartwright is Bart Simpson.
Oh, you're right.
Yardley Smith.
Yeah.
That she sounds like Yardley Smith.
She could be.
That could be Yardley Smith, for all we know. Okay, so to clarify, it's Akira's universe that's being created. And Tetsuo is being sucked into it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that that's just kind of a manifestation of Tetsuo and Akira's energy gone awry, but...
Well, I think they say that actually they're creating universe, or it's like the beginning of the universe. And that's the first smart thing he said. But he's right. And your lives in this universe are all that wonderful.
Yeah.
You could save him, and then you could...
Save him so he could live in a city where 40 million people have just been killed. And
well, not yet.
Been
They're about to get killed.
Yeah. You know, the fact that they think that Kaneda's worth saving is like...
Well, because he's been involved. He's been in the inner circle. He's been helping out. So he should survive.
He's grown as a person.
So, yeah.
From, you know, beating up on random other biker thugs.
Yeah. As opposed to the 40 million other people who are dying right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we get, like, super psychotropic, hallucinatory.
There should be a cow floating by.
And someone on a bicycle.
I did not hum. I was inspired to hum the... Tornado theme from...
You can hum that at home to yourselves.
Yes, please do.
Yes.
All the ways in which Kaneda was like a father figure.
Yeah, if they had, like, incorporated that near the beginning of the movie, kind of taken some care to set that up, it would have been much more effective emotionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, once again, I think that's it could be a writing thing, but I think it could be a cultural thing.
I think it's a writing thing.
It could be a cultural thing, or it could be just the fact that anime people come to it more from a visual background and don't have, you know...
But I think in terms of the writing, they decided that this information should come at the end as opposed to beginning in terms of emotionally. Well, we see the
children before they turn gray.
Right. So I think this is why we see this now. There's, little studious
wheelchair
man.
Kid.
Yeah, wheelchair kid, yeah.
And there's Akira.
Oh, that's right. And because he saw him... I know they were just chosen to. We're going to do experiments on you.
Yeah,
it's like the Cortexafam babies from
it is.
Fringe.
It is like Fringe. It is.
So maybe as the scientist, you get John Noble?
Yeah.
Not to typecast.
Too small a role for him. John Noble is the colonel.
He's too old for that role.
I know.
Bruce Campbell is the colonel.
He may be too old, but it's quite all right. He's got the chin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you not like Bruce Campbell?
I don't think it's physically possible.
I don't think it's physically possible. Everybody loves Bruce Campbell.
So this is the where it gets all a little meta and...
Yeah.
Have you seen Evangelion?
No.
No.
There's like hour after hour of this kind of thing, and it's mostly about a kid who's just whining his entire existence away. And then he turns a corner in one episode, and then there's like another four episodes where he regresses and just keeps whining.
And then... he advances.
And then it kind of ends unsatisfactorily. Oh. It's sort of a non-ending.
Oh. There's a white light. Don't go into the light.
It's Kaneda and the Beginning of the Universe, also known as Tetsuo.
Oh, I guess he beats... Oh, he went. He fought for him. He beat someone up to get his.
See, now they could have parceled this information out and then revealed later on, you know, closer to the end of the movie in a flashback that the other kids were also around. But they could have established some of this stuff a little earlier on.
Yeah.
Right.
Without giving that away.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I don't mind it with the writing wise. It's emotionally, yeah, we feel like we needed it before, but writing wise. Is that her or him? Oh my!
That's him.
Okay, so he's back, and now 40 million people die.
Yeah. Things that I don't actually ever want to see in real life.
That's right. This is like Watchmen, actually.
Yep.
In a way. Well, no. Well, that was different. Please tell us what the squiggly lines mean that we can't interpret. There we go. So if... if it's the birth of a universe, then what happened when Akira blew up? Well, sorry, scientist, you get killed.
Yeah.
Honestly, you had it coming.
Yep. Because this is like the explosion 31 years before.
Well, this is what's confusing because, like, well, if it was the birth of the universe 31 years before, then how come there's anything left?
Well, I don't take it as the birth of the universe, the birth of a universe.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting.
So is it then like the kids inside finally find some way to contain it?
Oh,
because it ends up floating on down and...
Yeah, this is a little Inception-y, the way those buildings were going into the ocean.
Right. Only this
Or Inception was a little bit this-y.
That's right. It was Akira-y.
Or 2012-y.
I didn't see 2012. Is it worth seeing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's the story's not... very good, but visually it's quite entertaining.
Okay, all right. I think it's true.
Things blowed up real good.
Destruction porn for sure.
Well, it totally is disaster porn. It's streaming on Netflix now.
Yeah, you know, skip through all the dialogue parts.
And there is a wee little universe.
And that's... So my question is, I accept that this is the universe that was created. But that means what happened the first time Akira blew up? Unless he didn't create a universe, he just kind of blew up.
There was a universe attempting to manifest it, destroyed a lot of things, and failed to manifest. And the three little kids joining in managed to manifest it into something creative.
So it's like the
and,
end of...
And
it's
Kay
like,
called him back because it's true love.
So this is a combination of the end of the Star Trek The Motion Picture and The Matrix.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. One which preceded, which one which followed. Okay.
So they're worried about Tetsuo, but looking around him and seeing the total devastation is just not even registering.
Well, they've seen it before. Well, they didn't see it before. They were too young.
Yeah.
Maybe they just sort of expect Tokyo to be periodically destroyed.
And it's okay. It's okay for 40 million people to just die.
Yeah.
He pulled the Daniel Jackson and ascended to a higher plane of existence. Don't worry, he'll be back and naked in a season.
What's like Star Trek The Motion Picture, too, at the end. Oh, the sun is out for the first time.
That's a nice touch.
Oh, Michael, look at the destruction. So the
buildings... Know, like, the buildings were even knocked over, but Colonel was safe in a tunnel.
Well, the buildings were just kind of knocked around and kind of chipped away. And, of course, we have the end, which is implying part of a Birth of the Universe moment. Suggesting that maybe our universe is a small little universe in another universe. It could be.
And there you have it. And here's the awesome theme music.
Yep. There you go. So this, the cast is... No, this is the,
that's
this
the Japanese
is, the Japanese language cast.
Yeah.
There are some really wonderful things about the movie, and it was really kind of a breakthrough in a lot of ways, especially for anime coming to the United States. But I think it would work best as an illustration to accompany reading the manga, probably.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. So they have a supervising director, okay.
Yeah.
And screenplay. Okay, he helped with the Katsuhiro Otomo.
And
Izo
Hashimoto. Yeah.
The music's really cool.
Yeah, the music is just amazing.
Is there a soundtrack?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes, there is a soundtrack. I own it somewhere.
Okay.
I think you might be able to buy it off of iTunes. It's just awesome.
Oh, okay.
I think this music influenced the composer of the music for Ghost in the Shell 2, Innocence, which is an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah, at the time, this was apparently the most expensive Japanese animated film ever made.
Totally see that.
Speaking of things like that, speaking of anime and stuff like that, I really want to see the live action Star Blazers. When's that coming to the United States? Darn it.
Live action what?
Live action Star Blazers.
What's
based
Star
on
Blazers?
Space Battleship Yamato.
And Star Blazers was made where?
In Japan. It's an animated series from the 70s.
And
made a live action movie. It was released in December 2010. Look up the YouTube videos of the trailer. It is, oh my God, unbelievably sexy and beautiful.
Okay. Star, hang on, I'm writing this down.
Star Blazers Star or Blazers. Space Battleship Yamato is
look,
the other name
I'll
for
look
it.
I'll look for Star Blazers. I have a lot to watch now.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're all about that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm still looking at the credits. I want to find out who the... There's a lot of people who worked on this.
Yes.
They did a very good job. Oh, computer graphics.
Huh.
I don't know. Well, who knows?
Oh,
maybe the backgrounds.
Technologies. I don't know.
Okay. Mm.
So all over the internet it says, no computers were used.
Shoji Yamashiro, remember that name. I'm going to try so I can find other stuff that he did.
Right. Music produced by the Akira Committee. I like that it was like the Akira Committee.
The Akira
like,
Committee, that you know what, they really didn't do much after this.
Well,
there's a lot of animes, though. It's a production company that's formed around the production of the individual film.
Right.
So here is the Akira Committee. Akira Committee.
Laserdisc Corporation.
Remember Laserdisc?
Partway through the production of this, the military actually arrested the Akira Committee and finished the film themselves.
Oh, that's possible. Oh, Oh, so, you know, I wonder what the words are for this, but I heard Canada, so...
Canada, Tetsuo.
So they're singing about the heroes of the movie. Ooh, yeah. That's good. Based on the graphic novel first published by Young Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the voice actors. I don't think we get it, do we?
So this was made in 1987.
Nope. Yep. And then this is the voice version that was done much later. Ah. Oh, here we go. Oh, and this is where we get the music.
This song, though, I read on the internet, this song does not appear on the soundtrack for this movie, but it is on the MASH soundtrack.
But it was in the original, when Akira came out, this song was in it, right?
It was in the movie. Okay. Oh, Les Claypool, he does a lot of sound effects editing for...
remixed.
For anime. But yeah, it was not... it was not released on the soundtrack album for the movie.
Okay, here we go. English. Okay, oh. Joshua Seth, Wendy Lee. Anyone we recognize?
Well, I've seen a lot of these names in relation to other animes that I've seen. There's a few different core groups of anime voice actors from the U.S. that are associated with different.
Okay, so they all do this kind of thing. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great song. Now I'm going to have to go watch MASH again. MASH is on the list of films to do for Film Grumpy.
Oh, that's a fantastic film.
Yeah.
Actually, just played at the New Beverly on Friday and Saturday night. I didn't have a chance to go see it.
I missed the New
Beverly.
It was
a brand new 35mm print.
Wow.
I know.
Sad to be out in the sticks. Maybe someday where it will come where we live. Anyway, I really feel like I've said all I have to say about Akira and about movies in general, possibly ever.
Wow. Did you enjoy watching it this time?
I did. I mean, you know, we were picking out the flaws, but I still think it's a really enjoyable movie. This is actually the second time I've watched it in 2 days, and I didn't hate it. You know, I loved it. I, despite the fact that Kaneda is kind of a jerk, you know, my inner 16-year-old still has a crush on him. And I still find it I think it's flawed, but I think it's one of the more successful anime movies I've seen, and I really enjoyed it, and I really got a lot out of it, and I think it's still stunningly beautiful.
I feel like, having watched a lot of anime, I feel like you kind of get used to things not being written maybe as effectively as they could be, or stories that have to shorthand some things and just accept that what's happening is happening, even though they didn't really quite get you there. So a lot of the criticisms that I have of this film, I would have of many anime films that I consider to even be great films. It just seems to be that happens in this genre. But that makes it so when somebody does do something that, you know, that takes care of those things, it makes it even better.
Yeah.
I would have the same complaints about just lots of movies that would be made. Oh, you know,
yeah.
So the nitpicking was not because... I mean, it was. I think you'd said before that they had written half of this was written, or at some point
the manga only the last like third of the manga had not been written yet when this movie was made.
And obviously that'll put some different stresses on how this gets done, and maybe that's part of what the seams that we're. I mean, I think it's more a matter of seeing the seams, or at least knowing that their seams are there,
mm-hmm.
where it kind of revealed itself. I mean, it wrapped itself up, you know, pretty decently. Got really pseudoscientific, but at least it followed through on what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the animation. It was really good seeing with you guys, because, you know, I've just seen it on my own like twice.
Mm.
Once really super drunk.
It's great to be able to talk all the way through a movie without somebody smacking you in the head.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so...
And gosh, out there in TV land, we're really glad, or out there in MP3 land, we're glad you didn't smack us in the head either.
Yeah, they're listening. So hopefully you've gotten something out of this. I've gotten something out of this. So I want to thank you again, you both, for coming by. I know you come from far, far away land to come
We have come from a far away land.
That's right. Not that far away, but far away from here. So from beautiful downtown Studio City. So we really appreciate you coming into Film Rock. So on that note, this has been...
Mike Rainey.
And
Nicole Gustis.
And Sarah Stolpier. This has been Film Rock. See you next time.